On today's show, we unveil our final big boards and give our big predictions before tonight's NBA draft. Plus, a recent report cites the Miami Heat as a possible landing spot for one Kyrie Irving. We'll tell you why it should be taken seriously. All of that and more coming up next.
I'm taking 10 blue notebooks with me to Malibu with my wife. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. 10 blue notebooks to Malibu. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. 10 blue notebooks to Malibu.
My life.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. However you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app, thank you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. One live NBA draft show is just not enough for the Locked On Podcast Network. Every show is going live on draft night, so join us 15 minutes after the Heat pick at Locked On Heat on YouTube for the immediate reaction from your local experts, us. Subscribe now to Locked On Heat so you know when we go live tonight. All right, on today's episode, we'll get to the Kyrie Irving news in a bit. But the NBA draft is tonight, David. We've got some big predictions as we wrap up our content leading up to the draft. We've had plenty of scouting reports, great interviews, and now we are finally ready to unveil our final big boards for the Heat. Now, this isn't including the top players, obviously, that we expect to go much earlier in the draft. We're trying to keep it to those players who could conceivably be on the board when the Heat pick at 27. So, David, let's start with yours. Who do you have at number one on your board?
I've got EJ Liddell. No secret after a couple of episodes talking about him in some regard as a sleeper or as a potential player that we scouted. Even mocked today, and as early as today, we saw that the basketballnews.com website has EJ Liddell slipping to 27th, falling to the Miami Heat. Just a big fan of his overall game, especially with the increasing likelihood that PJ Tucker is going to be seeking a long-term deal and probably going to be able to get it somewhere else if Miami's not going to be able to match or come close in terms of dollar amounts or years, or if they're not willing to make that kind of commitment. They're going to need to shore up the front court somehow. And what better way than to get a player that projects to be a PJ Tucker type, just a corner specialist from the three-point shot, a guy who can put the ball down, who can make the right pass, who sacrifices his body, has improved in his brief collegiate career, and is looking to take the next level. Just to hear him talk again, something we've said so many times on this show, to hear him in an interview talking about, I want to win, I just want to play ball, I just want to commit myself to doing whatever it takes. That's a Heat player through and through. He's my number one guy on my board.
We went in depth on EJ Liddell on a Blue Notebook scouting report last week. You and I love EJ Liddell. He is a prototypical Miami Heat player. He's also the prototypical power forward that fits next to Bam Adebayo, and you nail it. The reason we like him, point blank, but the reason he's number one on not just your board, but also mine, David, is because of exactly what you're talking about. We kind of talked about EJ Liddell being the next PJ Tucker. Oh, what a great protege he would be learning under a PJ Tucker, a guy that EJ Liddell has said that he studies, is one of the several guys that he studies, in addition to like Grant Williams and Draymond Green and some of these other kind of modern power forwards. But if PJ Tucker's not here anymore, all right, well, that's a pretty good replacement too. Obviously, on a rookie scale contract, if he was able to fall to 27, he's probably also the most unrealistic target on both of our big boards, given the teams that are ahead of Miami. But somewhat noticeable that he wasn't invited to the NBA draft green room in Brooklyn. It doesn't mean everything. It doesn't mean that he can't be up in the top group of 23 or 24 players that were invited to the green room. But it's just worth monitoring that the NBA doesn't think that EJ Liddell is going to be one of the first 23 or 24 guys picked. And if that's the case, then he's right there in range for the Heat. It makes sense why he's number one on your board, also number one on mine. Since I just kind of gave away my number one, who's your number two? We'll just keep going off of your big board.
Number two is a prospect that you scouted out of the University of Arizona. Dalen Terry, just a guy that seems to have all the right tools. He's got the physical prototype that makes him so appealing as a guard wing player for Miami. Shows defensive prowess. Can improve on the offensive end. We talked to Rafael Barlow about him when he was on the show a couple of days ago. Just seems like a kid that is continuing to climb in everybody's scouting reports. He's been a leaper over the last week or so as far as various types of big boards across the country and different scouts just continuing to be impressed by his potential. And while he doesn't strike me as the guy who can just come in and immediately find a way to contribute, he's not the ready-made player, the plug-and-play player that some of the other guys on our board are. But to me, he just seems to have all that kind of potential that Miami could be looking for if they're looking to upgrade the wing.
He's number two on my board, too. I love Dalen Terry. I did quite a bit of work on him. 6'7", 7 foot something wingspan, super toolsy kind of guy. Plays the point guard position at Arizona, was asked to do a whole lot for them. I actually think he would almost be better in a smaller role, especially on a team that's so ball movement heavy the way that Miami is. Just a lot to like there, as far as all the potential. And I think the Heat would be the right team to get the most out of him, to help him blossom into what he could potentially be, which is, I think, like a Scotty Barnes light, a guy who could guard multiple positions, play that point guard position, and then be a pretty decent shot maker, given his height, his athleticism, and all the potential that he has on that end. Who is number three on your board?
Just quickly conferring here. Let me see. Got to go to the big board. Oh, yes, that's right. Jaden Hardy, the G League Ignite player. Another player that we both have on our board, to be honest with you, because we like his scoring potential. It just seems like a guy, again, if you're looking to potentially trade Tyler Hero, or even if you're just looking to upgrade Tyler Hero to a potential starting role, mm-hmm. I think that Hardy provides that kind of scoring punch off the bench, another six-man type. Doesn't have the same kind of athleticism or explosiveness that maybe you're looking for out of a guard wing type. His commitment to defense has been questioned, but he seems like he has all the right tools. Showed improvement in his brief stint with the G League. He's a young player. Again, he has all the right things that you're looking for as far as his scoring, his temperament, and everything else like that. And one of the things that struck me as I was watching him play is just his, he doesn't get phased much. He just seems to be playing at his own pace. And I've always liked that comparison that you've said, or that thing that you've always noted about Tyler Hero, too, is that he just plays his game and he doesn't get rattled. And yeah, maybe a lot of people can look to the fact that he struggled in the playoffs, but he's the kind of guy who got that kind of attention. You know, Jimmy Butler, as great as he was mostly fighting through, single coverage there. It wasn't like he was double teamed. They were trying to take out actively Tyler Hero. Why? Because he is such a potent scorer. Mm-hmm. And if you can find another one like that in the draft, why not grab a player like that?
You scouted Jaden Hardy the first time we did our Blue Notebooks. I think it was – I did Kennedy Chandler, you did Jaden Hardy, and I came out the other side of that podcast thinking that the Heat – that their best fit among those two guys for them was Kennedy Chandler. I've done a complete 180 on that. I love Jaden Hardy. I've got him number three on my big board. It just comes down to this. Look, you could question the decision-making. You could question the defensive effort. I don't even care. Man, if you're picking at the end of the first round, I need something and you could find something that's elite. Jaden Hardy is as an elite three-point shooter as is going to be found at the end of the first round, not in just this draft, but in any recent draft that I've seen lately. That stroke is so pure, and you just watch it. You know, you watch more and more film the way that I have over the last week or so, and there's just so many pure makes where it doesn't even touch rim, and he's got so much range on that shot. That if you could find that at the end of the first round, the most important skill set arguably in the NBA today on offense, which is just distance three-point making, like this is a pure shooter. And look, we love the Duncan Robinsons, the Max Strus's, the Caleb Martins, the Gabe Vincents, all these stories. Outside of Duncan Robinson, I don't know that any of them are just a pure shooter. And that includes Max Strus. Like his percentages in college weren't awesome. You know, that stroke isn't like silky smooth the way it is with Jaden Hardy. And so... like, if you can find that innate talent, the other thing, too, is Jaden Hardy going into this season in the G League, he was the second-rated prospect on almost every recruiting database. This guy is so uber-talented. He didn't just come out of nowhere. He's not limited to the three-point stroke either. He's got great feel playmaking and all these other things. I think if you put him on, like, a Jordan Poole type of development program where, you lean into what he does well but also encourage quick decision-making – so that he doesn't have to get himself into trouble trying to make things happen in mid-range and over-dribble and things like that, and you mitigate what he could his shortcomings on defense, but then encourage those things because he's on a team that values those things, then all of a sudden, I think you have a really nice player. I don't know what he tops out as, if it's sixth man or sort of a low-level starter or maybe in a high-level starter. I don't care. If he could space the floor for you, just imagine how much easier Miami's offense would have functioned if you had a floor spacer the way that Jaden Hardy projects to be in the NBA. So I'm all in on Jaden Hardy. Let's quickly do your the fourth one here. You have Jake Laravia. I have Jake Laravia. Another 180 for both of us since we initially talked about him. Just a guy who gets it all done, right? Like a utility player, doesn't do anything great, but good cutter, good passer, spaces the floor, really good percentages from the corners. And to your point earlier about Liddell, if PJ Tucker walks, he's kind of that guy who's ready-made to do something right away. Maybe not start. I don't know if any rookie could be expected to start for a contender right away, but could certainly give you some valuable minutes at that four spot.
Yeah, I too also agree with you. Complete 180 on him. I saw him, and initially I was like, well, he doesn't look a little, you know, he looks unathletic, right? Yeah. And I know there's a stereotype and everything else, and I think that certainly plays a part to it. I can't deny that. But watching him on the floor, the same thing that we were talking about with Hardy a second ago, his pace is his, and he does not get rattled from that. He moves, he recognizes things, he sees the steps ahead. He's cutting, his ability to cut, you pointed it out, just really, really prominent there. Like, he just understands the flow of the game. You need that at this next level. That's a rookie who can find his minutes, and when he does, he's going to be able to achieve something. The fact that he has his comfortable rhythm. It doesn't look smooth, not certainly silky smooth like Hardy's, but he's got his rhythm going on when it comes to three-point shooting, too, from the corners in particular. He's a sharp passer. Again, it ties it all together. Offensively, defensively, he's going to have some issues, obviously, because he's not so quick-footed, but I think those things can be improved and taught. We've seen that from Duncan. We've seen that, you know, from Max and others. I think he can continue to grow, and so I'd like his ability there, just because his overall understanding of the game feels like he could become an addition to the Heat's rotation right away.
Yeah, he feels a little bit like Franz Wagner, but with like cement blocks attached to his feet a little bit, where he just does all the things really well, good percentages and stuff, but like. Yeah, the lateral movement, there's an issue there. He probably tops out as a high-level role player. He's not going to make an all-star game. When you watch him, I just think of Kyle Anderson. He just got like a slow pace to his game, but it's methodical. Right. It works for him. Slow-mo. It works for what his limitations are. He's just figured out how to play winning basketball in the body that he's been given, which, you know, is nice. He's got high capacity and basketball feel, which you like. Let's wrap it up with our fifth one here. I'm going to put both of our big boards side by side here on YouTube. I've got Christian Coloco at number five. That is not a surprise to anybody who's listened recently. You've got Marjan Beauchamp at number five. Talk me through Beauchamp at number five on your board.
Yeah, we've talked about it on a couple of different shows. Same thing. I like Beauchamp's overall athleticism. I love his journey. The fact that he's come to this conclusion that he wants to be an NBA basketball player, that he's committed to being a star at this next level. To me, that speaks volumes. He seems to have the right attitude that I think appeals to the Heat front office, a winner, a guy who's willing to grind it out, who's shown improvement. He struggled to some degree in his G League stint, but overall defensively, he showed some real prowess there, some anticipation, great instincts off the ball, and I think those things offensively can also translate and improve. So I just like his fit. He's a guy you can throw off the bench, kind of like a Matisse Thybulle light, and you know he's going to make big plays for you. We saw that from Caleb Martin. We saw him ignite Miami's fast break offense. We could get that from Beauchamp as well.
I like Beauchamp a lot. With the wings like him, Wendell Moore Jr. from Duke, some other names, Justin Lewis out of Marquette, the kid out of UCLA, like all these guys, they're so close to me. They're so close to me that I almost like couldn't pick which one. I went through five different guys. Max Christie from Michigan State, who's a nice movement shooter who fits obviously a lot of the things that Miami does offensively and has flashes defensively for guarding ones and twos and maybe even can move up and guard some threes in a pinch. But I ultimately went with Coloco just because maybe I'm a loyal person, I don't know, and I've been kind of pumping his gas like this whole time over the last couple of weeks. But I also think that he's just a ready-made rim protector with some upside there. And if you know, there's a role to play, especially when you look at Dwayne Dedmon potentially leaving in free agency. Not really sure what the Heat think of Omer Yurtseven and his ability to step in right away as backup center, but either way, it would be nice to have some options there. And it's not a great market for free agent centers either. So if you approach the end of the first round a little bit more like free agency, which is sort of the thinking between having like Laravia and Liddell at the top of our boards there, then maybe it makes sense to go after a Coloco or even like a Kessler Walker out of Auburn if you just need a backup big that you otherwise think you might not have or be able to get in free agency. Maybe you just use the end of the first round to go ahead and grab that guy too. So I had Coloco number five, but went through a number of different names there. Really stressed about it, actually. But we've got our big predictions for tonight's NBA draft, including the Heat making a move in the draft. That's coming up next. But first, let's talk about Arcade 1 Up. We've got big news. The one, the only NBA Jam is back. Arcade 1 Up, the leader in at-home retro arcade games, is not only bringing the best game ever back, but they've made it bigger than ever with a, wait for it, Shaq Edition machine. Yeah, a machine just like the old days that you go to at an arcade, a stand-up machine with a joystick and all that good stuff. People are obsessed with NBA Jam, and I'm thrilled to tell our listeners that you can once again play hoops with NBA legends in this arcade classic. Jump clear across the court and set the ball on fire in one of the first sports games ever to feature real and digitized NBA-licensed teams, no fouls, no free throws, and no quarters required. Compete with friends and family through all new Wi-Fi leaderboards, making you more connected than ever. Pre-order now from Arcade 1 Up. That's arcade, the number one, up.com for an estimated early September ship date. Arcade 1 Up is the place for fun. They've got even more classics like Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, and many others starting at just $399. Check this out. They're giving away an NBA Jam Shaq edition to a Locked On listener. Enter for a chance to win a game console for your man cave at arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade, the number one, up.com/lockedon. You've got until July 8th to enter to win the NBA Jam Shaq Edition console. Don't miss out. Enter today. Who are you going to play with? A reminder that we will be going live to react to the draft after the Heat make their selection tonight. So subscribe now on Locked On Heat so you know when we go live. It's time to give our final predictions ahead of tonight's NBA draft. My prediction is this. The Heat will make a selection in the second round tonight, David. Now, the Heat do not have a second round pick, but I believe that they will make a second round selection. I don't know how. It'll either be by trading back from 27 to maybe get some future picks and maybe a pick early in the second round, or even potentially by purchasing a second round pick. People around the league believe that these second-round picks are very much up for sale. We've heard reports that the Lakers are trying to get in. There's a lot of teams with multiple second-rounders. I'm looking at a team like Orlando, who's got a bunch of who have made a lot of selections recently, obviously have the number one choice tonight, but also have the number 32 pick, the number 35 pick. Would they be willing to maybe package both of those and move up to 27? Would Indiana be willing to put package number 31 and maybe a future pick to move up to 27? That's a possibility. Or Miami could simply buy one of these picks, maybe another pick from Minnesota at 40 or at 48 or something like that. I think that the Heat have been working out a lot of these guys who are projected in the second round, and it makes a lot of sense to me that they would try to go get one of these guys in the second round, again, either by trading back into the second round and picking up some future capital, or just by simply purchasing a pick. They've got $5.8 million to work with in acquisition. Now's the time to sort of use that stuff.
Well, even as we're recording this, the news from ESPN is that the Detroit Pistons have traded Jeremy Grant to the Portland Trailblazers. So we're recording this just as the report broke from Adrian Wojnarowski. So
a lot of local reporting that Jeremy Grant could, that the Heat were interested in Jeremy Grant. Now, I don't know how true that stuff was. It just never, we talked about it. It was never the right fit, considering the cost, right? And so it looks like Portland views Grant as the right fit.
Yeah, for their 2025 first round pick, though, it didn't cost much. No. And I don't know that it's the kind of move that helps Damian Lillard or helps him feel more secure about his position there with the Trailblazers. But either way, it looks like they just really wanted to move from that Grant contract. And you wonder why Miami couldn't get it done. And the only reasoning is that I think ultimately, they just probably didn't view him as worth the move or worth the sacrifice, or that they have bigger fish to fry. And I'm not sure
it's the opportunity cost, David. It's what we were talking about a couple days ago. Okay, you want to move a first round pick for Jeremy Grant? Fine, but now you're down one first round pick in the whale chase, right? The great whale chase. Whether it's Bradley Beal, Kyrie Irving, Donovan Mitchell, Damian Lillard down the road, who knows? I'm relieved. I'm relieved that this happened.
Yeah, I mean, we had talked about it, and I can't recall exactly what show it was. I had mentioned that it felt like the move in 2005 where they acquired, you know, Jason Williams or Antoine Walker, the move that kind of helped bolster the rest of the moves on that roster, the superstar level talent. Like, Jeremy Grant isn't the star that you need, but he's a good enough player to help, you know, bring out the best in your big three. But I would guess that they're probably committed to their big three of Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, and Bam Adebayo. And then if they're going to make another move, it's for something else, maybe a Donovan Mitchell type player. But we'll see how that shakes out. As far as your prediction, I agree with you 100%. I really am a believer that you bring in these guys, and Miami has shown in the past when they deem you worthy of a workout, when they like some potential there, I don't think they're necessarily about kind of throwing a smoke screen or anything like that. I don't think they're trying to. They have their own path. They certainly have their own internal scouting and everything else that obviously has proven to be pretty valuable. But I think if they bring somebody in, they want to be able to take advantage of the opportunity to see what you're like, to kind of just gauge your personality, to gauge your talent level.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what matters most to them is you have to show up in games throughout your collegiate career, but you also have to show up in these practices, especially when Pat Riley's there, when Eric Spoelstra's there, when you've got these big names that even these young college kids understand. I think it really, they're trying to find something. And they found it with Bam Adebayo. We've all heard stories about that incredible workout. They did it with Tyler Herro when he broke whatever records they had for that shooting drill that nobody's ever been able to beat. They've done things in these workouts in the past that they found what players that they want. And I think they were probably looking for something in these players as well. So, if you're trying to bolster your roster because you're going to lose Dwayne Dedmon, you might lose PJ Tucker, you might trade away Tyler or somebody else, then somebody who can fall in the second round, perhaps even wind up going undrafted. And to the point that Rafael Barlow brought up when he was on our show too, the talent disparity, it's not that great between picks 15 and 45. You can find a lot of really great role players, rotation level players, and that spread there, and that's pretty impressive. So for Miami to find a second round pick for relatively cheap and to get a guy that they could add to this rotation, I think it makes a lot of sense. So
and with this development program too, I mean they have so much confidence in it that they think that they can get a guy, whether it's a Justin Lewis out of Marquette who's physically imposing but very raw, a little slow footed, he needs work. But if there's a team that can kind of get the most out of him and that physique and the body and all that stuff that he does bring to the table, the Heat's development program is one of the ones that could probably get that done. You look at him, you look at a guy like Jabari Walker out of Colorado, who we talked about in our mailbag. You look there's a few different guys that I think that the Heat could potentially target there. And like I said, some of these wings are just, it's so close. Like what... The player that's going to be taken at the end of the first round and the player that's taken at 40, I don't know that there's going to be that much of a difference.
If you can get like Walker Kessler with a 40th pick, would you buy that pick in order to grab a guy like Kessler?
Yeah.
If Koloko winds up slipping, that's the kind of player that projects a potential first rounder. But if they find up slipping, and it happens every year, just teams sour on players. There's an internal scouting report or perhaps a lingering injury. And next thing you know, there's concerns, and those concerns blow up. And there's only so much information that these front offices have. And it's quite a bit, but sometimes it circulates and it kind of gets retread around a little bit. And next thing you know, player winds up dropping 20 places. And you know what? That's great because they get pissed off. They get motivated. So if you get that second round player that uses that as motivation, they wind up becoming, if not stars, at least really high impact players. So
sometimes, do you have a big prediction?
My prediction is they're going to keep whatever player they draft. I think
at 27.
Yes, at 27. I think they're going to have that pick. I don't think they're going to trade up. I don't think there's any kind of sense of urgency. Not urgency, but not desperation. And I think trading up, they're not desperate for anybody that's in the top 15. They're not even desperate for anybody in the top 20. Again, because there's so much talent, 15 through 45. And so when you've got a player like that at the 27th pick, I think they're going to want to keep it because I just don't know what that next move is. I don't know if they're gearing up for a run at Kyrie Irving or Donovan Mitchell or Bradley Beal or anybody else. But at the very least, I think you want to be able to at least have your ace up your sleeve, right? Or the bird in one hand is worth two in a bush. You want your bird in one hand, which is the player that you pick. You've scouted this player. You like what he brings to the table. You take a chance with them. and you keep him on the roster rather than, you know, potentially going after another star and maybe that falls through at the last minute, then you wind up with nothing. So to me, I like the idea. I predict that they will look at their 27th pick, find a player that they want, and take that player and keep him on the roster, at least through summer league and potentially into training camp as well.
I like it. I think this Heat team needs an infusion of young talent, an infusion of young athleticism, an infusion of young something. You look at the teams that just played in the finals. You hate, they're homegrown. They spend a lot of money on their roster, but they're also homegrown, and there's something to be said about drafting, developing, and doing that. Now, drafting somebody in the lottery versus 27 is a little bit different, and if the right move comes along, we know Pat Riley will make it. But I also don't think he'll just burn an asset just to burn an asset, which we just saw with the Jeremy Grant trade going down. He's not going to just trade 27 for a guy who's probably not the best fit just to do it and then waste that asset and potentially kind of blow the opportunity cost along with it. Coming up, why the Heat should be taken more seriously as a potential landing spot for Kyrie Irving. That's coming up next. Again, a reminder that we will be going live to react to the draft after the Heat make their pick tonight. Subscribe now on Locked On Heat on YouTube so you know when we go live. Let's get to this report from Mark Stein that has the Heat are considered a possible destination for Kyrie Irving. Stein writing Wednesday that the Heat is believed to have some level of interest in joining the chase for Irving. This is his quote. Should the Nets reach the point of actively trying to trade him and would figure to be a more legitimate landing spot than the teams initially mentioned, given the Heat's various trade assets. While it certainly ranks as another strain on the imagination to try to picture Irving finding daily comfort in Pat Riley's rigid South Beach operation, it's likewise true that the Heat never have shied away from the starriest of stars or personalities painted as challenging. It probably doesn't hurt that Miami's face of the franchise, Jimmy Butler, was quoted as saying the following on ESPN's First Take in 2017, I'd probably have to go with my favorite player who is not myself, and that's Kyrie Irving. I love Kyrie's game, man, and he's a really good dude. In fact, we went back and found that clip. Here it is.
If you had to pick one name in the NBA and say, I'd like to play with that guy or like him to come and play with me, who would it be?
One guy?
Yep.
I'd probably have to go with my favorite player who's not myself, and that's Kyrie. I love Kyrie's game, man. And he's a really good dude. I like Kyrie.
Kyrie, what do you make of Stein's report and of Jimmy's comments, David?
It's interesting. Seeing a lot of blowback, even when we talked about the Kyrie situation when the news first broke that he was potentially looking to either create leverage against the Brooklyn Nets or to explore a trade elsewhere. You know, we saw a lot of people from in our comments saying, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with Kyrie. And there's this weird, just, I don't know, animosity towards him. And in some cases, and I hate to bring this up, but in some cases it's like bordering on xenophobia and like all out racism because he's a Muslim, because he's, you know, because of his belief system and everything else. Like, yes, he might be unusual. Personally, as I've said before on the show many, many times, I like that. I like Kyrie. I don't care that you have to eat, bleed, sweat basketball 24/7. Because quite frankly, I think it's bull. I think that Jimmy Butler has incredible work ethic, but he's also got this reputation for being a dog and everything else. That dude is selling coffee in Chicago and hawking ice cream in Chicago. And there is no player that has to be 100% committed to the sport. Because it's ridiculous. Because you want to be able to have a proper work-life
balance.
Can
I push back on that a little bit? I mean, it would be nice if he like played basketball for the team that he's employed by.
I hear you. That's different. That's different. I think there's this,
but that's
there's
part
this...
and parcel with what we're talking about with Kyrie.
Absolutely.
So I saw a lot of the comments. I'm with you, man. Like, people dislike guys for any reason, X, Y, Z. You can name it. And yeah, sure. Some of it's probably racist. Some of it's probably whatever. Some of it's probably due to the vaccination stuff because that was such a polarizing topic. Whatever. At the end of the day, like, his trade value is such because nobody trusts him to show up for work. And that's part of it. And so when you talk about potentially trading for that guy, yeah, the Heat have had their fair share of interesting personalities from Shaq, Jimmy Butler, you name it.
Sure.
Lamar Odom. Like, you can name all these guys. But they showed up to work, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of the pushback with Kyrie. But I do think that this report has to be taken seriously because on paper, if he's on the court, he addresses a whole lot of the issues that we're talking about with Miami. Half-court offense, I said it before, Not only can Kyrie score in the half court, he could score in a phone booth. I mean, this problem fixed if Kyrie Irving is on the court. Yeah. It's not perfect. It's not perfect because of all the off-the-court stuff that we're talking about and the trust issues between employer and employee. It's not perfect. He's not the ideal star if you're Pat Riley that you want to go whale hunting for.
Right.
But who's the perfect guy that's out there? You know, right. It doesn't seem like the Jazz are moving off Donovan Mitchell anytime soon. Right. Bradley Beal, like I said, he loves flirting with nobody. We'll see what happens when he demands a trade. Tell me. I don't know. I don't know what the other guy is. And if it's Kyrie Irving versus Jeremy Grant, we just saw the Heat pass on, then it's like, what are you really going to do there? Can I say this, though? The Heat also have the best assets available of any of the other teams that have been sort of reportedly interested in Kyrie, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Knicks. Like, if you're Brooklyn, then if you're looking at packages, you're like, yeah, I'll take the Heat one with actual draft picks and, like, Kyle Lowry or whatever it is. Like, even that beats anything that those other teams could put together logistically. And we've heard the Clippers noise is not really that serious. Let me throw one other thing at you, though. ESPN, Arjen Rozhanovsky reported today on Wednesday also that Kyrie's main leverage, and this might ultimately just be a leverage play, by the way, is throwing Miami in there in that mix. Because if Brooklyn didn't react very seriously to the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Knicks, because, by the way, nobody did, then it helps to throw, like, Pat Riley in the mix and be like, well, he'll do anything, right?
Right, right.
And so that might ultimately be a leverage play, and that's kind of my sense on all this stuff anyway. But Woj reported that Kyrie's main leverage is, hey, if you let me go, then you know who's next to demand a trade is going to be Kevin Durant.
Right.
And so if you're the Heat and you're the team with all the assets, wouldn't you just rather wait for KD?
Absolutely. I mean, you make that sacrifice of P.J. Tucker and or whatever it takes in order to get Kevin Durant, who's still playing at an incredibly high level. Like, you have, again, to your point about Kyrie's half-court offense and the concerns about whether or not he can fix it. Yeah, KD fixes it and then some. Like, you're going to win a lot of basketball with Jimmy Butler, Kevin Durant, and Bam Adebayo on that roster. Like, whatever it'll take to pry him out of Brooklyn, if you can do that, yes. I don't know. That is pretty good leverage, and it's good incentive from the Brooklyn Nets to see that. But I don't know. I question that as well. I don't think Durant and Kyrie are attached to hip. You know, as much as I think he joined that team because Kyrie was there in the first place, he's seen enough for the last couple of years where maybe he just wants to hoop. I think he's grown off the court as well, just his off the court interests, the way he communicates his interests and things of that sort. Like, I think he's kind of tired. He's already proven himself. He's one of the top players ever. He's won his titles. Yes, I think he'd like to win more, but I don't know if it necessarily drives him as much as it once did. The discourse about who the Finals MVP. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, can I flip it? Like, I'm sure, with you. Man, I don't think Durant cares. I don't know what he cares about. I don't know that I'm not going to pretend to know. But what about Brooklyn? Like, if you're the Nets front office and you trade Kyrie Irving, like, what's really the incentive of holding on to Kevin Durant? You know, you kind of put everything on this to be the Kyrie Kevin Durant show with James Harden or Ben Simmons backing up on the bass guitar, basically. But it's like, all right, you're really going to win. You're going to beat Milwaukee. You're going to beat Boston. You're going to beat Miami with Kevin Durant and a bunch of Joe Harrises. No, you're not.
I think the pendulum has swung so far in the other direction about Ben Simmons that it's just kind of weird. Like, I've been critical of him in the past.
Ben Simmons and Kevin Durant. Like, you're going to win a championship with those two?
You're also going to get Kyle Lowry in exchange for Kyrie Irving or something like that. I mean, it worked for Miami.
I think if you're Brooklyn, do you just hit the big red button and just be like, all right, we have no assets, we have nothing, but if we move Kyrie and Kevin Durant, we could just completely restock everything, and you have a young GM and Sean Marks, and you have this group that, I don't know, I just...
No, they were just there. They had that young, promising team from a couple of years ago.
And they did a deal with the devil.
And his name was Kyrie Irving, so I don't know, potential Heat player there. I don't know if we want to necessarily throw that.
You know what I mean.
But it's just interesting. Like, there's a lot of potential there. I don't think Durant's going to get moved.
You think Kyrie stays?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think there's an increasing smoke there about the potential trade. And look, to our discussion about whether or not he fits in Miami, if Jimmy gives him the vote of confidence, And he comes to that front office. He talks to Coach Pat, as he calls him, and he says, no, Kyrie's the dude. He'll come in here and he'll play and he'll figure it out. And maybe this was in 2017 when he was still with the Cavs at that point, right? He was just about to force his trade.
Boston. Oh, Kyrie was with the Cavs. Yeah, I think so.
He was just about to force his trade to the Boston. Yeah. And remember, back then too, he listed Miami as a potential trade partner, right? When he was looking to go elsewhere, and then the Celtics went in and swooped him away. It's been a rough couple of years for Kyrie and his reputation, but on the court hasn't changed. Like when he's on there, to your point, he's been very, very good. And I don't know, maybe Miami can find a way to get through to him and say, look, none of this BS.
Oh, you're doing what it's going to take. You're talking yourself into it, David.
I am.
Well,
there is
one thing. Kevin Durant is, look, I'm not calling him soft. Please, listeners, do not take it this way. But he's a passive superstar, right? He just sort of does his thing. And he kind of lets the stuff around him just be the stuff around him. You're also hearing reports now that he's not even interested in trying to convince free agents to come on over to Brooklyn. Like, he's just like, no, that's the front office's job. And in some respect, you're like, all right, cool. That's kind of a new superstar, just letting people do their jobs and not getting involved. Yeah. But at the same time, they seem to be a little disappointed with it. But he's, again, just sort of a passive superstar doing his thing. That's not Jimmy Butler's MO, man. Like, Jimmy Butler's not going to be like, yeah, Kyrie, I understand if you don't want to come to work. That's cool. Do your thing. Figure out your stuff. Like, if Jimmy's sort of the guy who brings Kyrie in, you just wonder. I'm not saying it's going to be yes or no. You just wonder if Jimmy's going to react the same way that Kevin Durant did to all of Kyrie's eccentricities, okay? I would guess probably not the same way. I don't know if that matters. I don't know if it results in Kyrie being more available than he was in Brooklyn. I just know that Jimmy Butler won't go about it the same way as Kevin Durant. Doesn't make it a right or wrong. It just makes it different. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
There's also the possibility, right?
I think he ends up staying in Brooklyn, by the way. But
I agree. Is it the possibility also that whatever restrictions were in place this year would be probably minimized and he would wind up playing a full slate of games? Like, I mean, he's always
talking about the vaccination stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
he's still going to miss time.
The vaccination stuff, it was just going to be something else, man, with him.
Hey, Kyle went on for personal issues, obviously much more.
Those are different things.
Absolutely.
Kyrie Irving doesn't really give you the reason. Kyle Lowry
gives us.
The Heat know why Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
The reporting is that the Nets didn't know where he was.
Yeah, well, I'm sure KD knew. I'm sure KD knew.
Doesn't help much.
No, I mean, well, KD didn't seem to care either. So that's my point, though. It's like he'll call Jimmy and be like, "Listen, no, I've got to go to a sweat lodge in Southwest Arizona." You know, it's like, "Hey, man, go for it. I know where you are. Just don't tell Coach Pat." And you know, that's fine. And he's gonna go do it. You think Pat Riley's gonna be comfortable with him going to a spiritual journey to do peyote at some point in mid-February when they're
only if
for
Pat
the first
Riley's
spot?
Invited.
I don't think he's a peyote kind of guy. They didn't have peyote butts.
He's more
going
of a Malibu
kind
of.
He was doing other things there, but anyway, not in Schenectady, boy. I'll tell you that much.
I got
anyway.
A fake trade idea for you.
All right, go for it.
We'll end it on this. Hypothetically, if Kyrie Irving wants to be in Miami and Miami wants to make it happen,
yep.
Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker
in a sign and trade,
a double sign and trade. So PJ opts out because he already did. You sign and trade him to a 3-year, $30 million deal or something in that range.
Yeah.
Plus Kyle Lowry in return for Kyrie Irving and, you know, double sign and trade. Kyrie signed him to a 3-year, whatever it is, deal that they agreed to. The math works out. And now if you're Miami, you've got Kyrie Irving. Okay. And if you're Brooklyn, you've got Lowry, Joe Harris coming back, Kevin Durant, PJ Tucker, whoever your center is.
Yeah.
It's a pretty decent team.
It is.
Just a fake trade idea I wanted to throw at you.
I think it's a good deal. I hate it. I hate it and I like it at the same time. Like I'm kind of torn because like...
And there it is. That's the Kyrie Irving experience.
Yeah. Like I'm torn because the identity of this past year's group was like gritty and tough and PJ was such a dog. And you love watching him sacrifice his 50-year-old body out every night.
Sure.
But you know, how much longer can he keep that up? And Kyle was, you know, Kyle was almost a non-factor in the playoffs as much as I like Kyle. To me, that move works if you're trading Tyler, Duncan, or somebody for a legitimate four. Like, not only to acquire somebody via the draft, but you've got to get an established player now to bolster that. I don't know if it's Markieff Morris or Marcus Morris, rather. Get the Morai twins.
Maybe you just draft EJ Liddell.
Yeah, well, I mean, Liddell coming off the bench, and you trade for the Morai, and you get him on the roster now. All of a sudden, you've got a revamped roster. That would work, right? I mean, I'm not sure what it would take to take Marcus Morris out of Los Angeles, but I think it would be an interesting idea.
There'd be options. I don't know.
Nick Batum, sign and trade too. You trade him to
just sign and trades everywhere. Everybody gets
signed and trade. You get a sign and trade. I get a sign and trade. We all get sign and trades.
Tonight is the NBA draft. We're really, really excited, but that'll do it for today's show. Remember to like and subscribe to Locked On Heat on YouTube for wherever or wherever you listen to the podcast. Comment and leave a 5-star rating. You reach us on Twitter at Locked On Heat. Thank you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. The first picks of the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft have been made. Search now for the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft and get over 50 insiders, the Odyssey sports experts, the draft experts of the Locked On NBA Big Board. The 5-episode Ultimate NBA Mock Draft is underway and finishing up today. Make Ultimate NBA Mock Draft your second listen today. If you're watching on YouTube or not watching on YouTube right now, go to our YouTube page. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Again, we are going live tonight. After the draft, we have a full breakdown of everything that goes down. It promises it to be a crazy night, but for now, thanks for joining me, David.
I wish I had some peyote for the draft, I'll tell you that.